Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. How does Jimbo have job security at A&M? They have fired their last five head coaches. Because they just signed
they just
them to
an extension.
$100 million 10-year deal. It wasn't that long, but... Yeah, I don't see Jimbo leaving. Like, every article I've seen, like, the leading candidate for the LSU job has Jimbo Fisher as, like, the cover boy of these articles. I don't see Jimbo leaving, even though he is boys with the AD, Scott Woodward, there. Chris Peterson's a name that I've seen mentioned just once, but it makes sense because of the Woodward connection. I've seen James Franklin mentioned. Joe Brady has been mentioned.
I'm with you on Brady, unless there is some kind of magic allure to the NFL that he's enjoyed since he's gotten to Carolina and believes that's the place to be. For me, from the standpoint of not having to deal with recruiting every year and limitations by the NCAA. Otherwise, I think it just makes too much sense because, you know what, you even calmed down the alums that got riled up because the report out of Cincinnati was Joe Burrow was already extremely upset that Coach O was being shown the door, and that was, you know, not making him happy. Well, you want your NFL alums happy because they helped the program in so many ways. You go get Brady, you go get a guy that I guarantee you that as much as he was upset in the fact that Coach O is gone, I guarantee you Joe Burrow is going to be like, okay, but I'm okay with that move.
Yeah, I think that they get a good head coach. We were discussing before we went to break Orgeron being a head coach again in college football. I don't see it happening because I think Orgeron to be a head coach again in college football is going to want a top echelon job, and I don't think those top echelon jobs will be looking for Coach
O. Notice I didn't say head coaching job. I could see him going back to SC, though, as a, you know, being a coach. He's been just completely celebrated as a defensive line coach. Travis Johnson, a friend of both of ours, a friend of the show, can't say enough good things about Coach O as a not only just a recruiter, but as a D-line coach. And you get him in your program, and you're going to get players that want to play for you. And because, look, that rah-rah thing sells with players when it's about toughness, when it's about taking care of the guys in the locker room, when it's about doing things the right way from that standpoint. Because you're right. From a head coaching perspective, with the kind of jobs that he's going to want, there's no university that's turning the reins over to a guy that's done as many things that he's done that's been questionable in terms of some of the things you mentioned and so much more. So I think that he would be better suited to be an assistant. Basically, what he's already told you is LSU took care of him very well and said, hey, as a parting gift for that national championship and what you did bring to this university, we want to make sure that while you do walk out the door, you walk out with your pocket stuffed. He doesn't need to make a decision right away. He probably won't get another head coaching job, but he's going to want to be around football. He's going to want to do some of the things that he's done his whole career. And so I think someone's going to put him on their staff because they could do a lot worse in terms of what it does for recruiting and what it does for defensive line play.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's get to our MVPs of the weekend. It could be from any sport, can be anything, and you can text in, too, who your MVPs of the weekend are. 713-780-3776. Mine's Jake Odorizzi. And it's a bit of a surprise because he gave up the grand slam in the second inning. He got hit around pretty good. But just the fact that he was able to save the bullpen. He came in a tough spot after Luis Garcia had a knee injury there in the second inning. Took forever to warm up, as he should. But he saved the bullpen going four innings and perhaps giving the Astros a better chance to win the ALCS. My MVP this weekend is Jake Odorizzi.
My MVP this weekend, I'm going to stay in the sport, stay with the team. I'm going to go to someone completely different because it could have been disastrous in another way if it didn't go well. It's Jose Altuve because after committing the error that cost them dearly in game one and knowing what Jose Altuve went through with the yips or whatever you want to call it psychologically fielding and throwing a year ago, he not only bounced back, but before there was Correa time, there wouldn't have been a need for Correa time if Altuve doesn't hit the bomb heard around Houston that got him back in the game and ultimately back in the series. It's Jose Altuve because you know what? He overcame the error. He made a statement for his team and for his city and got them in a point in which Correa could help them win the game. And therefore, I give it to Jose Altuve.
So I got Odorizzi. Joel's got Altuve. Who do you have, Houston? 713-780-3776. What about you, Dell? Who is your MVP of the weekend?
All those unnamed players on Purdue. Because it
the Fighting Jerry Palms.
Because it potential. Well, that is actually a connection to the show. Because it ends a potential nightmare scenario where we have to talk about Iowa's viability as a national title contender for the next 5 to 6 weeks because the Big Ten isn't great. The rest of their schedule isn't great because they're in the Big Ten West, so they don't see the Big Ten East, the likes of Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, or Ohio State. It would have been Wisconsin, Joel. Not a great game against Army, but they did win.
They suck.
At Wisconsin, at Northwestern, home to Minnesota, which is not bad. Home to Illinois and then at Nebraska. They could very well have gone undefeated in the regular season, and then we had to go watch them probably get the brakes beaten off of them in the Big Ten title game. So Purdue, can't even really name one of your players, even though I watched a lot of that game. Thank you for ending this early.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
Purdue, a lot of people jumping on the Spartans bandwagon. My good friend Sean Respert.
Are they?
My boy Sean Respert, all-time leading scorer in Big Ten history. But he's never been a massive Michigan State football fan. He left playing hoops with us early on Saturday for the first time ever because he had to go watch his Spartans because they got a chance to be national title contenders. God, I hope not.
They don't have a chance.
They beat Indiana by 5.
Exactly. And I kept telling him this. But I hope Michigan State isn't the next team to take over for Iowa in terms of the chance to bees that should have no chance being there.
Their issue is, unlike Iowa, they do play in the Big Ten East. And despite being 7-0, they still see Michigan in 2 weeks.
Michigan ain't great, by the way.
No, but they got it. It's a home game, but they still see Michigan. They still see Ohio State. And they still see Penn State. So that's three top 10 teams on their schedule the rest of the way. The path is not as clear as it was for Iowa. I think they could beat Michigan because I don't trust Michigan's passing game, but Ohio State's probably going to score a lot of points on them.
Who is your MVP of the weekend? 713-780-3776. We got Purdue. We got Jose Altuve. We have Jake Odorizzi. Ocho saying Kirk Cousins. How about that? Kirk Cousins, another overtime victory. He's clutch, turning into Mr. Clutch there for Minnesota.
You like that? Yeah,
exactly. Everybody liked that. There was a Minnesota fan that over the weekend.
Lucked out. That game never had any business going to overtime, let alone needing Kirk Cousins. But if you want to call Kirk Cousins, that's on you, Ojo.
Mr. Clutch. It's 3224. MVP is Todd from Houston. He put $20 on an 11-team parlay and hit it for $20,000.
Oh, that's a damn good MVP.
Pretty good little parlay, right?
Yeah.
Man,
I can never... Most valuable parlay goes to Todd. I don't know about the award itself for the show, but we'll give him the parlay.
6670, my MVP over the weekend, Kiki Hernandez. How do you block numbers on this text line? Just kidding. Kiki Hernandez, is going on with Kiki Hernandez?
If you had a do-over in the world of sports right now, would it be the agent wishing that he only signed a one-year deal with the Red Sox? Because I was telling Lisa, because Kike Hernandez played for the Dodgers before that, that's how she even knew the name.
Former Astro.
And Astro back in the day. I was like, this dude, if he was a free agent in the offseason, you talk about how much money Correa is going to get, and because he obviously deserves it, this dude is the poster child for one team that would majorly overpay for a World Series hero. We talked about guys like, was it Larry Brown that we talked about, that Cowboys, Raiders, whatever, where he's MVP of a Super Bowl, got completely overpaid, then got cut.
Yeah.
This is that kind of deal. I'm not saying he's going to get cut, but he hit under 230 for the regular season. But right now, you can't get the guy out, and someone would be willing to grossly overpay. The Mets would love to have Kike Hernandez for a whole lot of money if he was free. But he's not. He's got one more year at $7 million for the Red Sox, and the Red Sox are celebrating every dollar of it.
Yeah, he's normally ordinary in the regular season. He's been awesome in the postseason.
Extraordinary in the playoffs.
Extraordinary is a good way to put it. Dre says his MVP is Correa. Daywon Donna. Donna saying that the Florida Gator quarterback's throwing interceptions is her MVP. Dak Prescott. An MVP as well. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's look to see how Davis Mills played in this game against the Colts yesterday. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I thought the first half he played well, just like he had played the last game. And the second half, though, the turnover basically it flipped the whole game around for us with that INT. And then I thought after he came back after that, that he settled down and he did some things. I think the interception at the end really was no big deal.
That was David Culley on his quarterback, Davis Mills, yesterday. His assessment of Davis Mills. Like, I thought Davis Mills was average. I mean, below average. I didn't think he... a lot of the failure in yesterday's game was not Davis Mills' fault, right? Like, I'm not going to put a whole lot of that loss on Davis Mills. I didn't think Davis Mills played good, but I also don't think he played bad. And I thought he had terrible support around him.
Right.
Like, if I'm giving him a grade, C. C for Davis Mills.
But I think you can't give anybody on the team higher than that. I really don't.
No, probably Davis Mills was one of
your
better
performers. I mean, the secondary gets
an F+.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the one thing that you knew coming in was T.Y. Hilton ate your team for lunch and dinner and breakfast and snacks. So you might want to guard the deep ball. Couldn't do that. Couldn't do that with anybody, Campbell or T.Y. Hilton or any of the above, okay? So I don't think anybody gets over a C when you get your doors blown off like that. But I think that what you really astutely put on Twitter, which was accurate, was where Davis Mills was able to at least look good because of all the things you brought up, especially the personnel he was dealing with, was quick decisions where he didn't have to think too much. He didn't go through the progressions of his route trees too much and his options. Just get it out of my hands quickly. Therefore, I avoid pressure and making a quick decision that doesn't go the right way or fumbling or getting hit and throwing the ball up for grabs. And that when he was able to be put in situations where he could succeed by getting the ball out quickly and just making a quick snap, 2 second or less decision, he looked like he wasn't over his head. The rest of the team looked like they were drowning from the first play.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a product of having three offensive linemen out, Tunsil, Britt, and Cannon, and also the Colts' pass rush can be pretty good at times. I think the Colts started to figure out the Texans' game plan, though, a little bit in the second half, and the fact that he was throwing the ball quick and these quick releases, not having many reads, and basically trying to dumb it down for the rookie quarterback a little bit, which I think Tim Kelly had no choice but to do. And that's why we saw Davis Mills struggle more in the second half than he did in the first half. Something that was bothering me during the CBS game yesterday, watching the broadcast on CBS yesterday, was how they were just glowing for Davis Mills and how well he looked in the first half whenever you had a team score 3 points on the road against a below-average defense. I thought Davis Mills was just a guy yesterday. You know, I didn't see a whole lot of upside from Davis Mills. The fact that like any time that he wasn't having to throw those quick releases, like any time he had to go through his progressions and look a little bit longer and he actually had time to throw, is actually when you saw the mistakes. Like that kind of was a little worrisome for me when watching Davis Mills.
Here's
yesterday.
The other thing I noticed, Jeremy. I don't know if you did or not, but I think the other thing that continues to be something that you know I've harped on since the day that he got behind center in a Texans uniform is he does not know how to look off a secondary.
No, he doesn't.
He does not how to look off defenders. He knows where the play is called and who's supposed to get it, and that is the only direction he is looking, and he is tipping off the defenders over and over again. They might not get interceptions out of it, but they're making the easy throw tougher. The only reason why he's completing the balls that he's completing is because they're so quick that the defense can't react quick enough off the snap.
But that's why you saw more press coverage
right.
in the second half, and
right.
that's why he struggled there a little bit. Like, I wouldn't blitz Davis Mills.
No.
Like, I would use four-man rush.
Four if you can get there. That's exactly
and
right.
And you've seen stunts can confuse this offensive line that's now down three offensive linemen. You have a rookie quarterback there as well. I would be playing press coverage. I would be basically daring him to beat me over the top, and I wouldn't be blitzing either. I'd just drop guys back in coverage. Like, the interception he threw, I forget who picked it off. But, I mean, was it Darius Leonard? There was nobody around. Like, he was the target, basically. And Davis Mills just never saw him. And that's to your point, too. Like, he's not looking off the defense.
No.
And it's not even that position, like, we're looking off the defense because they're dropping back into his own coverage. You're not really looking anybody off. It's just reading what's in front of you.
It's like, not just the safeties that are teeing off because he's staring down his receivers. It's the linebackers, as you mentioned, because everybody's feeding off of his eyes. And he's not coy at all in where he's intending to throw the football, and that's a big problem. The bigger problem is the personnel and the fact that there are guys in the locker room probably that still can't cope with what the organization has planned on all along, which we set you up for, which was failure. And that's what's going to happen. And no one wanted to admit that, and no one was ready to hear our opinions on that after week one because they beat the Jags. They beat the Jags, okay? So now the Jags, who finally got their first win, lucky as it may be, all because Dell's Dolphins are absolutely dog snot.
Yeah.
But the fact is, when you look at it from an overall perspective, it gave false hope to a fan base that shouldn't have it for this season.
Yeah.
Because they should be embracing and focusing on embrace the suck.
I don't know if it gave a lot of false hope.
Oh, my God. We saw the text and the tweets and everybody that said, look at how wrong you guys could be. You guys were the guys that were telling me that they were going to be terrible. They could actually, there's an outside chance this team could win the division. They could sneak in the playoffs. Ain't no sneaking, tiptoeing, or fooling anybody, folks. This team sucks, and their quarterback right now is a work in progress. And one of the things that I will take it to your level in terms of coaching staff, because I still believe they have a very good, experienced NFL coaching staff, aside from their head coach. Their head coach is showing more and more shortcomings each and every week. That is a major concern going forward after they embrace the suck. Because you're hoping the embrace the suck is only for 1 year, and then because of the positive progressions, you're going to find someone that's going to take them to the next level. It ain't David Culley. And he's making Pep Hamilton and Lovie Smith and even Tim Kelly, guys that at least in the first two guys' cases, were established veteran head coaches in the NFL that belong on someone's coaching staff. They can't continue to do it with bells and whistles and smoke and mirrors. They have to have guys that can actually play for them to do the things that they want to do. And clearly right now, they do not.
If, and I don't want them to, but if they draft a quarterback in the first round next year, it shouldn't be with this coaching staff. Like, you go find that wizard offensive mind that can groom quarterbacks. Whoever that guy is, you bring him in next season. I don't care if Culley has the 5-year deal. Here's what Davis Mills had to say following the performance in which his offense scored just 3 points against a below-average defense.
I don't know if it's entirely on them. I think some of it is on us. We got to execute a little better at times. They played sound on defense, didn't make very many mistakes. We turned the ball over. I mean, we called some shot plays. We're trying to get the ball down the field, and it was covered up on most of them. It's got to be better.
I feel like Davis Mills is about to have his breakdown. Like, he's been able to handle all of this, like, calmly. He's able to do the press conference stuff calmly. He's able
to get
criticized calmly.
He went to press conference 101 at a pristine university like Stanford. There's one thing that he's getting, because you could say he could have taken that a step further and say, that's on me, because I am absolutely bug-eyes staring down everyone I'm throwing to. So he was actually soft-selling a little bit more. He knows how to handle a press conference. But whether or not he can handle everything else or not is still up in the air.
I think his meltdown's coming.
When you say meltdown, what does that mean?
Like a temper tantrum on the field, or maybe he gets a little snappy with the reporter.
You know why? Because that's the first thing that's going to get him shipped out of town, and that's the last thing he wants. Because he knows, at least with this organization, committing a third-round draft pick to him, he's got a couple-year window before he's actually shown the door. The only way that that process gets speeded up is if he acts up and acts out like you're talking about. I don't think he does that.
713-780-3776. Something to monitor, because I feel like his breakdown moment is coming in this his rookie season. One more from David Culley. We talked about the short passes, the quick passes for Davis Mills. David Culley asked about that after the game.
We just didn't have the plays today that we've normally had during the game. It had nothing to do with it. It's not trying. We attempted to throw some balls down the field. Wasn't able to get them. And it basically was just how it happened during the game.
That was a head scratcher for me. Yeah,
we didn't have the plays. They're the same plays in the same playbook that you have complete access to. You had access to every play in the repertoire. Don't tell me that all of a sudden things changed between the Patriots defense and the Colts defense. Colts defense has been garbage compared to what people thought it was going to be all season long. And so they have not been playing good football. The Patriots, as much as it's been kind of up in the air on offense because of Mac Jones being a rookie, the bigger thing was they knew that with the veterans they brought in, they could defend. Well, you made Indianapolis look like they were locked down, lights out defenders yesterday. Don't give me that about what access plays you had.
That's what I saw on, like, the Texans Homer Twitter yesterday, was like the fact that the Colts defense was legit and really good. Like, no, they're not. If you look at their DVOA, 23rd ranked defense in the NFL coming into yesterday's game, like, that's not even a below average defense. That's like in the bottom third of the league.
Darius Leonard was just known more for being Mack trucked and run over by a running back named Derrick Henry than he was for being a perennial all-pro linebacker like he has been.
Isn't that weird, tipping the cap to what with like the defense that really isn't very good this season? Oh, yeah, they did a great job. No, your offense is just really bad. It's not a great defense. It's your offense is not good.
And Jeremy, here's the thing. On the flip side, too, from a Texans defensive perspective, especially with an established defensive coach like Lovie Smith, was it a mystery that they were going to go deep? You knew The Colts were going to go deep. They were going to throw the football. Even against the Ravens, Carson Wentz, the one thing he was doing was slinging it all over the field, and he wasn't afraid to take shots. You knew with T.Y. Hilton, the one thing that they would love to keep doing was keep pounding it in that this guy absolutely owns you. And you know what they didn't do? They didn't defend the deep ball, and they got beat by it multiple times.
Yeah, I think you have some players on that defense that have quit on this team, Lonnie Johnson Jr. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Matt Trent covers the LSU Tigers for WBRZ in Baton Rouge. We're going to get his thoughts on Coach O leaving the Bayou and who could be a potential replacement, and also why they're doing it at the end of the season and not right now. I'm curious that for Matt Trent. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Let's jump right straight out to the HRMP guest line. Big college football news over the weekend. Ed Orgeron and LSU parting ways at season's end. Matt Trent covers the Tigers for WBRZ in Baton Rouge. Matt, why wait? That's the thing I'm wondering. Why wait to the end of the season to part ways?
You know, there are a lot of things I think that went into it. I think, honestly, Scott Woodward, the athletics director, wanted to see if he could give Ed Orgeron a fighting chance. And, you know, after Florida, a lot of fans were thinking, hey, maybe, you know, he might be willing to fight for this thing and we might be able to turn this thing around. But You wait because, again, Ed Orgeron, I think it was a lot just about respect. You know, what about he's done for this state and college football in general. But I think that with everything going on, not just on the football field, it was just so insurmountable and just so overwhelming that you had to pull the trigger. And I think Scott Woodward is one of the most calculated and patient athletic directors in all of college sports. And I think he couldn't take it any longer.
Matt, you beat me to my question because to me it's like you waited but you didn't. You now have the most attractive job in all of college football out there, so you're going to have your pick of whoever the heck you want. But to me, for the reputation of Coach O, from every Go Tigers to everything that said this was his dream job, he got, you know, the fan base, the national title they so sorely wanted, and they got it. How much of this was led by what he did off the field, and how much was led by what happened since the title game on the field?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it, and, you know, just knowing people around the program and talking to fans and stuff, the reason why that everything off the field is as bad as it was is because of where we came from, where LSU was in 2019 on the top of the college football world, 15-0, a national championship, a Heisman winner, and countless other awards. And it seemed as though nothing could go wrong. And look, 2020 was a crapshoot and a toss-away year for everyone, even Alabama, who won the national championship. And so you really can't even look at that with much disdain. But then when things that continued to happen in 2020 this year, when you don't really have an excuse, I think that was one of the biggest things because, look, Ed Orgeron said very, very strongly last year, the reason why Bo Pelini sucked is because I didn't get to interview him. I didn't get to vet him. I was force-fed this. I want to pick my guys just like I did with Joe Brady in 2019, plucking him out of the Saints and throwing him into the fire and going to get Joe Burrow. I know what talent looks like, and I can evaluate it. Let me do it. And the oddly enough, is that him doing that, trying to make it right, actually made it worse. And that, you know, Ed is not very organized. Ed is making countless mistakes all the time, even when he doesn't understand it. And he's been very hands-on with everything. And his interference into game plans offensively and defensively are the problem. That's why you're seeing, even though LSU beat Florida over the weekend, that was one of the only games where offensive coordinator Jake Peets could call his own game. And they forced four turnovers, gave up 400 yards of offense, and they still won. And so I think that is why it's just so insurmountable, and the off-the-field stuff and the exploits, it was just timed.
Matt Trent covers the Tigers for WBRZ, and speaking to that personal life, kind of bleeding into the coaching life, you tweeted this, multiple practices with girlfriends would be in attendance. They would interfere. There was a story that he was hitting on and higher up at LSU's wife who was pregnant at a gas station. How much of that was involved in this decision, of course, to also what was going on the field?
You know, that with all the stuff going on, they were – That is grounds for cause in my book. And I think a lot of people at LSU would agree and say that stuff that went on was grounds for cause. But I think what happened is Scott Woodward saw all this stuff, and with everything that came across his desk, he said it's better to get it out of the way now. We can agree on a lower settlement or the full settlement, and we can get out of here, because it's just like with any football coach. Every football coach and every program knows where the bodies are buried. And when you have an incident like that and you leave, they have the potential to go scorched earth on the entire program and make the firing or the letting go or the separation of ways, whatever it was, make it look that much worse. So without going to court and fighting a legal battle, because every coach is going to do that, they have the resources, it's better to just say, okay, we've agreed to part ways. You don't want to be here, and I don't want you here. Let's go ahead and get this drawn up and get him out the door, because, you know, I hate to say this, and Brody Miller from The Athletic touched on it a little bit. There is more to come. I mean, the stories are just getting started, and they're going to get worse. You know, I was telling someone the other day, we've all sat on this stuff for almost 2 years. And we've heard about it, but honestly, some of the stuff is so outrageous that you couldn't even fathom it would go on in college football, much less everyday life. And that is why the downward spiral of Ed Orgeron has been the way it is because he put everything that was external to LSU football ahead of LSU football and prepping every week. And it just got out of control. And
everybody sitting on it? Was it sitting on it because of fear of repercussion? Was it sitting on it because you were looking for multiple sources to verify it? Because, I mean, look, I know how it is in these college football, you know, is God-type communities where we've seen it from law enforcement to otherwise where, you know, the head coach that brings the title can walk on water and do whatever the hell he wants. But I just ask you the question, and obviously you can't speak for everybody else in the media, but why sit on it for this long?
Because it was already out. And it was already out in front of everyone's face, and it was just common knowledge. And look, shame on us for probably not reporting it earlier. Yeah, I'll go ahead and agree with that. But when you're in a town like Baton Rouge, I mean, Ed Orgeron has more power than the governor in some instances. And so you just kind of hear it, and again, some of the stuff was so outrageous you didn't believe it. You wow. didn't believe it. And what I tweeted out yesterday, I'll be totally honest, I've heard that for months, and I didn't believe it. And I said, no, that didn't happen. But checking with players, checking with coaches, checking with other sources, every single one said, yes, that is absolutely correct. That happened. Wow. And I actually got a message today from an LSU football coach that said, I appreciate that you put that out there because someone needed to hear it. Because it was almost kind of a form of an intervention, right? Like the coaches are sitting here going, you can't be doing this. You can't be bringing women around the football facilities and ops and stuff like that and expect everybody to just turn a blind eye. I'm sure that there were people in that building that said, Ed, you got to stop. Like, you have to stop doing this because this is looking bad and it's affecting your ability to do your job. And he didn't get it. So where else do we turn? You turn to people, reporters, media, that have the ability to get it out on a grand scale. And that's why you're seeing all this stuff now, because we honestly, we have heard everything imaginable. And we have to honestly vet it, and we have to see if it's true or not. And with my particular story, it was so many people's stories lined up, and so many of them were true verbatim down to the smallest detail that it was hard not to report.
Well, Matt, a twofold question then coming out of this. Does he coach again? And I said, I don't think he gets a head coaching job, and we both agreed no major university is going to hire him. But he had a reputation prior to LSU of being a recruiter, being a D-line coach, being a guy that had NFL guys that believed in him. Does he coach again? And then from your gut feeling following this team and knowing the university and obviously trying to overcome some of the stuff you've mentioned, who do you see as the top two or three candidates to replace him?
Well, he has already made it clear yesterday in his press conference that next year he is not going to coach. After this year, whether LSU makes a bowl or not, he will continue to coach in the bowl if they make it. And after this year, he's not going to coach. He said he wants to take some time away from football and kind of decompress and figure out. And he was honest yesterday. He said, I want to figure out kind of what route I want to go in and what I want to do, and I want to spend some time with my kids. And I believe him. Do I think he's going to coach again? In a Power 5 job, I would find it very difficult. But unless it's a program that is struggling at the Power 5 level that needs some resurgence, because, look, we can say whatever we want about Ed Orgeron and his off-the-field exploits. The man can recruit with the best of them, and he is a world-class motivator. It's just when you have stuff like he's had, it kind of outweighs and overshadows that a little bit. I could honestly see him being a defensive line coach somewhere or a assistant somewhere, but it would have to take the perfect situation. Now, as far as the replacements for him, it's still very, very early. We have heard every name imaginable, from James Franklin at Penn State to Billy Napier right down the road here at UL Lafayette. Honestly, right now, everybody is, you know, in play. But I will say it's going to be a huge factor with the new president, William Tate, at LSU. He's an African-American man, and I know that he and Scott Woodward have had conversations that he is really pushing the minority hire pretty hard. So you look at Mel Tucker at Michigan State. You look at Arab Amenemy with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's another one that is coming up on a list a lot. So it's going to be a really tough go to find that perfect guy, because this person is going to have to come up and do a lot of cleaning up here in Baton Rouge.
Scott Woodward has the relationship. He hired Jimbo Fisher at A&M. He hired Chris Peterson at Washington. And it sounds like you already answered my question. I was going to ask you, more likely one of those guys or more likely someone else? And it sounds like it's the latter.
So, you know, the thing is that I, ironically enough, have covered Scott Woodward at two different places. I was in College Station for 2.5 years when he was at A&M, and now him here. And the one thing that I can tell you is that he is very good with getting information out to the public in a good way. He's very calculated. You're not going to hear a whole lot of leaks. You're not going to hear a whole lot of sources say during this coaching search, because he goes about things very meticulously. You know, like with basketball and Kim Mulkey, we pretty much had a good understanding that she was going to come here, but we can never get anyone to say, yes, she's coming, yes, she's agreed, because Scott is very good at that, keeping stuff under wraps. Now, with baseball, when Paul Maneri just retired, we had a list of about, everybody had the same list, about 4 or 5, and we were hearing big name candidates, and then you hire Jay Johnson from Arizona, and everybody was sitting here going, what? You know, that's not, nobody had that on my bingo card. Nobody. Mm-hmm. And then he's actually, it's been a very, one of those kind of really good surprises. He's paid off dividends early, getting kids to stay, getting recruits in. So with Scott Woodward, you might have a swing for the fences like he did at A&M with Jimbo, or you might have a new up-and-comer, or maybe someone that's a second B-tier type coach. But Scott Woodward is going to get his man, because the pockets are very, very deep at LSU, and money is no object when it comes to getting a big name.
Well, Matt, great stuff. Great coverage on this, and hope to catch up with you a little bit down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
You got it. Matt Trent, big stuff.
Good stuff.
Big stuff. WBRZ Baton Rouge stopping by on the HRMP guest line. Coming up next, a wild one in the Patriots-Cowboys game. And Aaron Rodgers apparently has a new stock. We tell you what we mean next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Play fake. Boot to the right. Looking down the field. Lamb! 10! 5! Victory! Cowboys win! The ghosts are exorcised.
They're exorcised. I think that was Brad Sham on 105.3 The Fan. Cowboys and OT defeat the Patriots. That felt good for the folks who had Cowboys minus -4. That they didn't settle for that field goal.
Is that you?
Perhaps.
Yeah.
I had a pretty good weekend myself.
No one asked, but why don't you tell us about it?
I will. I feel like patting myself on the back. I had a good weekend if you ever want to tell.
Just another day that ends in Y.
Cowboys 5-1 now. Patriots fall to 2-4. The weirdest thing, though, Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones were like making out after the game in their luxury suite. That was bizarre. Like, that was weirder than Tom Brady kissing his young boy on the lips.
Awkward.
It was weird.
Like, I don't know how you were brought up.
Never kissed my dad on the lips once.
But, like, everybody's different. But as a father, the one thing that I don't do is I'm not kissing my kids on the lips. I'll kiss them on the cheek, on the forehead, stuff like that. But, I mean, I saw enough anguish and enough faces growing up of parents that wanted to do something like that. That's awkward enough. But when two grown-ass men over the hill start pressing lips together, I don't need that.
Yeah, that was bizarre. You sure it wasn't, like, optical illusion with the cameras, or was, like, legit, you think? I'm hoping it was optical illusion.
I think they're old school. I think they're old school South. I think they've probably always done that, and so it's just like the same thing, like you mentioned. With the weirder thing is like Brady and Kraft, because they're not family, but they've kissed each other in front of cameras.
On the lips?
I'm not on the lips, I don't think, but I'm not sure. I know for sure on the cheek. Dell, I don't know, maybe you can refresh my memory. I thought at one point...
No, I cannot.
In a pregame... No, I'm not saying that you like inside information.
Uh-huh.
I thought there was a pregame or two where when they caught up or after a Super Bowl... That not, as part of the embrace, there was a pucker.
I don't know. I just know, we know about Brady kissing his kid.
Yeah.
That game was on CBS, right? I don't think CBS at any point in their entire broadcasting history has had men of that age kissing each other on their normal TV shows.
True.
I don't think it's ever, like, Jerry Jones is 79, Stephen Jones is 57. They have never.
Are you saying on Blue Bloods, no one got under Tom Selleck's mustache?
No, Tom Selleck's not kissing Donnie Wahlberg on Blue Bloods.
Well, Donnie Wahlberg's not old enough.
I know.
But I mean, maybe somewhere else, Tom Selleck got the old stop mustacho somewhere.
No, I don't think it's not happening.
I couldn't name a show on CBS.
I just did. But in the show, his dad is still part of the show, and he's an older guy. Maybe Tom Selleck lip-locked with Pop.
It's unlikely. It's not happening on the 3 FBI shows they have or the 4 CSI shows they have. Not happening. It's new ground for CBS.
We got down this whole like national network TV show thing, did you see that the latest edition of Simon Cowell's I think it's America's Got Talent. They were calling it America's Got Talent Extreme.
Yeah.
So, it's basically like even more like heart-pounding kind of stunts and things like stuntmen.
Like extreme Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah. So, the one guy was an experienced stuntman, and evidently he was doing a stunt where he was hanging from a rope from a pretty high distance, and there were two cars that at a certain point, if the stunt wasn't executed, they would end up coming down, swinging like in a pendulum and meeting right in the middle where this guy was hanging. And he was doing all that he could to pull this Houdini act and evidently didn't do everything on time and like got caught. And someone with a cell phone camera caught the two vehicles as they met him in the middle.
Did you watch it?
I saw it. NBC, I believe, had it. And they said it's not verified because it was someone with a cell phone. However, they stopped the video right before impact. But, like, that's why the entire production has been tabled, and you're like, you know what? When do we take it too far?
There. Right then.
Yeah.
Right. I saw the story. I didn't watch the video because I thought we were going to see it. I don't like stuff like that. Like, anything that could potentially kill somebody, I'm not watching. Maybe I'm in the minority there, but just not my thing. Back to that Cowboys game. They yeah. win it by six. Crazy ending. Trayvon Diggs, another interception. Interception in six straight games. Gave the Cowboys the lead late, but then they had a busted play in the secondary with Trayvon Diggs in the safety. Mac Jones, a long touchdown. They regained the lead. Then Greg Zuerlein hits the 49-yard field goal to tie it and then sends it to overtime before that CeeDee Lamb touchdown gives them the win. Dak Prescott strained his calf in the game, though. Good time for a bye. They have a bye this week heading into the bye. With five wins in a row. That's a strong team there. They're going to run away with the NFC East, no doubt. Question when it comes to the Cowboys is how far can they go in the playoffs?
I think that's why this is key with this injury to Dak, because he has been a leading candidate for MVP. He has been carrying you no matter what, running back by committee or healthy defense or young corner that's picking at least one pick per game in Diggs. I think that you've pushed all the right buttons to this point, but the one thing you cannot afford is an injury to Dak. If this thing, and a lot of times with calf injuries, and we've seen them, and we don't know the extent of Kareem Hunt, and I'm hearing that was a calf as well. But you know what? Calf injuries, if they completely pop, they could be a month and a half, 2 months. If you can catch them in time, and you didn't see Dak limping all over the field, that hopefully you catch it in time, it can be a few weeks. But that, because they now have their sights set on bigger goals, right? They were always the favorite to win that division, and the division has been crap. But now, if you want to compete with the Rams and the Bucks and the elite in the NFC, home field's going to mean something. And having as good a record as you can have is going to mean a lot. And therefore, you cannot afford to have Dak out for multiple weeks.
And they also have a weak schedule, right? Because they're in a weak division. If they take advantage of that weak schedule and they beat up on the opponents in the NFC East, then you have to figure that they're going to be one of those teams. Well, actually, there's only one team that gets the bye this year because you have the seven teams in the playoffs. So only the
it's top a good home field at Jerry World with 100,000 potentially fans in your favor. You want them to come through your house as opposed to having to go to Tampa, having to go to SoFi. You don't want that unless you absolutely have to.
One of my favorite bets I made preseason, Dallas Cowboys plus 110 to win the division. They were getting plus money to win the NFC East. I'm feeling really good about that one as we talk right now.
Why is this just you blowing your horn today?
I'm just talking about a good value that I got. Is it that big a deal?
I mean, if it's multiple stories and multiple times you've made reference to it.
We were talking about the Cowboys and how they were favorites to win the NFC East. And I'm just telling you, I had them. I was one of the shrewd guys that made the bet.
Shrewd. Now you're giving yourself even more compliments.
Is it not shrewd? I didn't bet the football team. I tell you when I miss bets, too.
Not often, but go ahead.
What do you mean not often? We made a whole segment about Benedict Branham betting on Team Europe.
Well, but I mean, that was
We made fun of me betting for
Buffalo. That was
for
being un-American. That wasn't about
Buffalo.
You making
how
a
long,
bad bet.
How long have you guys been working together? What, mid-August, right?
Yeah, just 2 months, I think.
You haven't become aware of he doesn't like when things go well for you? Yeah,
that's not true. I'm the one that's been making sure people took note of things that he's done well when we from the time we got this show started.
He doesn't want me to get a big head, I guess. Big head is Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay.
I didn't mention the 5-1 Packers when I mentioned the teams the Cowboys would have to contend with in the NFC or otherwise.
What does that have to do with anything?
I'm not saying that towards you. I'm just saying that I'm not going to sit there for the listeners and force feed the Packers stuff. But because you and I talked about this prior to the start of the weekend, what was the spread? Seven and a half?
It was right around there, yeah. They covered.
Yeah, I told you I took that.
That was one of my nine wins.
Because I helped you out and told you that I felt like, as much as I stay away from those games, I felt like they would
do that. You did.
But the fact that on the way out, and I caught it because, I'm watching every single play of the game.
Yeah.
I caught it live on the mics, but I'm like, that's not something that they're probably going to exploit, are they, by playing that audio? Oh, my God, it has a life of its own for the fact that Roger, now there's, and I retweeted it so people could see it. Now, there were Bear fans that were basically, oh, that's not our fan base. Our fan base wouldn't do something like that. Now I basically have four different angles of almost two entire sections at Soldier Field or whatever they're calling it now with double rods up.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers was running with the football up 17-14 late in the fourth quarter. He was trying his best to cover for me. He was able to get into the end zone. He said later in this press conference that he looked up and there was a Bears woman fan who was giving him the double rods. But here's what he had to say to that woman and that touchdown drive that Aaron Rodgers had.
Rodgers snaps it quick. Pressure coming. Scrambles to his right.
pumps and runs, and Rodgers is inside the pylon. Touchdown, Packers. It's Rodgers running for the score.
Right on cue, Jones. He had some choice words there for the crowd.
I love how the color commentator feels the need to paint the picture any further, as if we didn't hear what Aaron Rodgers was saying. Well, I own you, to the Chicago Bears fan.
And here's the thing. First of all, it's a weak-ass excuse in the post-game press conference when he said, all bets were off. Once she gave me the double birds, I blacked out. I don't remember what I said. You're full of you-know-what, Aaron. You remember every damn word you said, and you had every right to say them. But I think it started with the fact that he clearly was going into the end zone and had a foot in when Jackson, their defensive back, decided to try and tee off a little bit.
He did.
And that fired him up. Also, earlier in the game, on a sack, the Bears' defensive line did the discount double-check belt. So, therefore, he did it when he scored. Devontae Adams did it across the end zone afterwards. And I had Bears fans tweeting that are friends of ours that said, you know, I get sick and tired of this Aaron Rodgers stuff and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what starts it? Well, that stuff. And you know what finishes it? Here's the thing where I noticed in Twitch, my resident Bear fan Mark is nowhere to be found after he was giddy going into this game. When you're 22-5 in your 27 games in your lifetime against the Chicago Bears, to use a term that is very apropos here, but don't poke the sleeping bear one more time, because he's been wide awake kicking your ass for a long period of time.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked what Aaron Rodgers did right when he scored the touchdown, doing the discount double check. I didn't realize that was something the Bears were doing, and then telling all the fans they were at the Soldier Stadium, Soldier Field, that he is their daddy, basically, saying, I own you guys, and he does. 5 wins in a row, meanwhile, for Green Bay, after people were jumping off the ship after they lost to the Saints in Week 1. Packers 5-1, Bears 3-3. Bears being 500 on the season is kind of interesting, too. You wouldn't have guessed that with all the drama they've been having. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Game 3, ALCS tonight, Red Sox-Astros, always critical Game 3s in a 7-game series. We look at the pitching matchup when we come back. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN
92.5. Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Houston, hello.